Part 2. The Cretaceous Period. Chapter 3. Max had finally admitted that he needed Joe's help and had agreed that they'd be going on a journey together to find Dardan.
I think I know where the pyramids have been taken.
Joe asked him whether they were going back in time straight away. Max said yes, but Joe needed some training first.
Before we go after Dardan, you'll have to go on a short trip back to the year 1999. This will ensure that your body can cope with travelling through time before we go even further back.
Where is your time machine?
Asked Joe, thinking about the destruction of the cave. Max pulled out a small ball from his pocket as he replied.
Let's go somewhere quieter.
After finding a quiet alley, Max threw the ball on the ground. There was a loud bang, and suddenly a large silver ball appeared in front of them, the same size as a small car.
This is the silver sphere,
said Max, opening a door in the side of the ball.
Climb in.
Inside, there were two seats and a console with lots of buttons. Max typed in the date of their destination, 31st of December, 1999, and a time of 11:57 p.m. Then, as the door of the sphere began to close, a timer appeared in front of Joe. It was counting backwards from the year 2022. While the numbers counted down, Joe watched the monitor in front of him. He could see famous world events being shown on the screen, but they were all going in reverse. As the sphere started spinning, Joe began to feel dizzy, and as the timer counted down to 1999, he started feeling like he was going to be sick. Fortunately, he wasn't sick, and after a short while they stopped spinning and the door slid open.
We're here.
As they stepped out of the time machine and onto the London street, Max explained to Joe that he'd feel better in a minute or two. It was just a shock for his first time travel journey. Before long, Joe heard a loud voice counting down from 10 over some kind of big speaker. The crowd that was gathered at the side of the River Thames started to count down as well.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The crowd chanted in unison, until Joe heard the following from the announcer.
Welcome to the year 2000!
Joe couldn't believe he was actually here. He had travelled back in time. His mum and dad had told him all about the Millennium celebrations, but he never imagined he'd get to experience it for himself. He took a moment to just breathe in the excitable atmosphere.
Well done. You are officially a time traveller. But now we have a long journey ahead of us.
The two of them got back into the silver sphere and Max typed in a date. The door glided to a close. The sphere started to spin and the countdown began once again. Max explained that they were going to return to Highcross before travelling back to the Cretaceous period. Joe had to check what Max had just said.
The Cretaceous period?
Yes,
replied Max.
The dinosaur times?
Asked Joe.
Yes,
said Max. Joe felt dizzy as he stepped out of the time machine, but that soon passed when he looked around and saw their surroundings. He simply could not believe what he was seeing. Stretching out in front of him was a landscape, the kind of which he'd only ever seen in films or read about in books. They were in a forest clearing, with a small lake directly in front of them and a large volcano further in the distance. The volcano had smoke coming out of it, billowing into the sky in huge swirling spirals. The temperature was extremely warm and tropical, a far cry from the London they'd just come from.
Are we still in England?
Asked Joe, stretching his arms high into the sky and enjoying the heat.
We are on the land that will eventually become England. It's not an island yet. It's physically connected to what will one day become Europe. The climate is much warmer in this time.
Wow,
was all Joe could say. Max shrank the silver sphere and put it back in his pocket.
I'm afraid the trekker doesn't work this far in the past, so we'll have to walk.
Where are we going?
Max pointed at the horizon.
Inside that volcano.
Joe couldn't help but gulp.
Oh!
They'd been walking for about 10 minutes when they heard a noise behind them. Grabbing Joe's arm, Max pulled him off the path to hide behind a tree. When Joe looked back at where they'd been walking, he saw the most amazing scene. There was a small herd of enormous dinosaurs walking towards a large lake, much bigger than the one they'd seen when they first arrived. Max explained that it was a Titanosaurus herd.
They are harmless. They're herbivores, which means they only eat leaves.
Despite this, however, they kept their distance to avoid being trampled and squashed by the herd. An hour later, the friends were still walking and it was starting to get dark.
We should stop for the night,
suggested Max,
as it would be too dangerous to travel in the dark.
He explained that even though they hadn't seen any other dinosaurs on their journey, that didn't mean they weren't around. Joe agreed. He knew they had to be careful in this time. Max took something out of his pocket and threw it against the ground. There was a loud bang, and once again, a large silver sphere appeared.
It will be better if you sleep in the silver sphere,
Max told Joe as he set up a hammock inside the small transport device.
I'll keep watch outside, just to be on the safe side.
Joe nodded, taking one last glance around him before making his way inside the silver sphere. Joe had been sleeping soundly all night when suddenly he heard a loud roar. He bolted upright as the doors to the time machine slid open and Max ran inside.
I think we have a problem.
A video monitor rose from the floor and, peering at it, Joe could see what the problem was. There was a giant dinosaur right outside the silver sphere.
What is it?
It's a Tyrannosaurus Rex,
Max replied. The T-Rex started sniffing at the silver sphere. It then started nudging it with its head. Each time the T-Rex nudged the silver sphere, it moved forward a little, and Joe could see from the monitor that each nudge was pushing the sphere closer and closer to the edge of a small cliff.
Strap in!
As fast as they could, they sat in the chairs and put their seatbelts on, just in time to see the edge of the cliff approaching. The T-Rex nudged the sphere once more, and with that, it fell over the edge. The silver sphere had landed in a fast-flowing river and was now being carried downstream at speed. Joe and Max were being spun around as if they were inside a large washing machine.
How do we stop?
We need to wait until the flow of the river slows down.
Joe gritted his teeth as he held onto his chair, hoping they'd be stopping soon. He was beginning to feel a little sick. After what seemed like an eternity, the sphere did in fact start to slow down, and eventually it stabilised.
What happened?
Asked Joe.
The river's getting calmer,
Max explained. The silver sphere was now floating gently down the river, and before long, Max had managed to regain full control and was able to steer them towards the shore. Joe and Max disembarked from the sphere, relieved that they'd got back to land. Max shrunk the sphere and put it back in his pocket.
Are you okay?
Joe didn't respond. He was too busy thinking about how unbelievable this day had been. If he hadn't seen, heard, felt, and smelt the landscape around him, he would have definitely thought he was dreaming. There was one good thing about their unplanned river cruise. It had taken them closer to the volcano.
How do you know that the pyramids are in the volcano?
Asked Joe, looking up at the huge mountain. Max turned to face Joe.
I don't know for sure, but the sensor in the silver sphere shows us that Dardan is in this time. And the volcano looks exactly like the place on my planet where he comes from. It's undeniably the type of place he'd hide the pyramids.
They continued walking for most of the day before they were forced to stop. The undergrowth in the jungle was getting thicker and thicker, and as such, the journey was getting more and more difficult.
I'll climb to the top of that tree,
said Max, pointing at an enormous oak tree right in front of them. As Max climbed, Joe waited patiently, but nervously, on the ground. Every sound he heard coming from the jungle seemed like it was being made by something that wanted to eat him. And there were certainly lots of hungry creatures in this jungle. Suddenly, there was a loud roaring sound that made the hairs on Joe's arm stand on end. Turning towards the direction of the roar, he started to panic. It sounded far away, but as far as Joe was concerned, it wasn't far enough. Joe looked up at the oak tree to see Max climbing down.
Hurry up!
Come with me,
instructed Max, as calm as ever, as he started walking further into the jungle. Joe followed. He was relieved that Max was back and that they were getting further away from the roaring sound. A few moments later, Max said excitedly,
You're not going to believe what I've just seen.
As they passed through a heavy section of jungle and into a clearing, Joe realised what Max was so excited about. In the trees at the other side of the clearing was an enormous treehouse. Patrick and Lily had lived in a treehouse in this jungle for almost a whole year now. Along with their parents, they had built a safe spot to live in the middle of this dangerous place. They had arrived here accidentally, following one of their dad's experiments with a type of transporter he'd invented. Professor Robinson had thought he'd invented a machine that could transport someone anywhere in the world instantaneously. He was so confident in the safety and effectiveness of the machine that he'd decided his family, him, Mrs. Robinson and the twins, Patrick and Lily, should go somewhere exotic. At first, he thought that the transporter had worked. They had definitely arrived somewhere exotic. It was only after they saw their first dinosaur that Professor Robinson realised he'd made a terrible mistake. And, to make matters worse, the transporter was now broken. With no way to repair it, they were stuck. It was only thanks to Mrs. Robinson, an architect, that they had the skills to build their treehouse. The first few weeks had been scary. This part of the jungle didn't get as many dinosaurs, but occasionally one or two would pass through. The family had slept in the transporter for those first few weeks, but the professor soon realised it was too dangerous to spend too long on the ground. If a Tyrannosaurus had passed by, they would have been eaten. So they got to building and moved into the treehouse just 6 weeks after arriving. Patrick was the older of the two twins, but only by 25 minutes. At 5'4", he was tall for his age with longish blonde hair. He desperately wanted a haircut, but there was a distinct lack of hairdressers in the Cretaceous period. He wore a battered pair of blue jeans and a white t-shirt. At 5'1", Lily was much shorter. She also had long blonde hair, which she constantly tied back into a ponytail, and she wore a pair of tracksuit bottoms and a blue t-shirt. When they'd left their home, the family hadn't packed any clothes, as the trip was only supposed to be for a day. The lack of clothes was a constant source of frustration for the twins.
What are you up to?
Lily snapped at Patrick.
None of your business,
Patrick hissed. Patrick and Lily loved being brother and sister, but, like many siblings, they did bicker a lot. After all, there really wasn't much to do in this treehouse, and it wasn't safe to travel too far into the jungle. Patrick started running in and out of Lily's bedroom, making growling and roaring noises.
Stop that!
Lily demanded.
You're scaring me. Don't be silly. I'm just messing around.
Lily glanced at him with a look of anger and disappointment, and, as usual, Patrick started to feel guilty. He immediately apologised and sat down next to his sister. The two siblings had just turned 13 and had celebrated this milestone birthday at the top of a tree in a dinosaur-infested jungle. It wasn't exactly where they'd expected to become teenagers. Suddenly, they heard a loud roar. Patrick quickly stood up and pulled a cord that was hanging from the ceiling, causing the ringing of a bell to echo throughout the treehouse. A second later, the professor and Mrs. Robinson ran into Lily's bedroom.
"What is it?"
shrieked Mrs. Robinson. The twins both replied in unison.
"Dinosaur!"
Professor Robinson pulled out a pair of binoculars and scanned the clearing. After a second or two, he turned back to his family with a look of shock. He then handed the binoculars to Patrick, who also looked out at the clearing. Patrick couldn't believe what he was seeing. He turned away and rubbed his eyes, then turned back and looked again.
"What is it?"
asked Lily.
It looks like two boys."
Joe and Max cautiously approached the treehouse. It was just so completely unexpected. What with it being in the middle of the jungle in the time of the dinosaurs? It simply shouldn't have been here.
"Is there anybody there?"
There was no response. They reached the bottom of the tree and glanced around. It didn't look like there was any way of getting up to the treehouse. Suddenly, another loud roar came bellowing out of the jungle. Whatever it was getting closer. They both turned toward the direction of the roar, just in time to see an enormous Tyrannosaurus walk out from the jungle and into the clearing. The gigantic dinosaur surveyed the clearing, soon noticing an extremely vulnerable Joe and Max standing by the tree. Without hesitating, it lurched toward the tree, gaining speed and momentum with every step. Joe suggested that they try to climb the tree. But before Max could respond, a rope ladder dropped down from above. They hesitated for a few moments.
"We have no idea who's up there,"
cautioned Max.
"Yes, but we know what's down here."
By now, the T-Rex was getting extremely close. They simply had no other choice. So Joe and Max climbed up the rope ladder as quickly as they could. When they reached the top of the ladder, they climbed into the treehouse just as the tree started trembling and rocking. The T-Rex had rammed into the tree head first and was now lying unconscious on the ground below.
"Are you okay?"
asked Lily.
"Yes, thanks,"
replied Max. The Robinson family just stood there, staring at Joe and Max. In shock.
"What are you doing here?"
asked Professor Robinson.
"Really?"
said Mrs. Robinson, shaking her head.
"Have we forgotten our manners? Boys, please take a seat and get your breath back. Then you can tell us whenever you're ready."
Joe and Max gratefully sat down and explained the whole story to the Robinsons. The professor then told Joe and Max how his family had arrived in this place.
"Can you take us back to 2021?
Asked Mrs. Robinson. Max looked at her and replied,
"Of course we can."
The Robinson family cheered in unison, unable to believe their luck.
"Thank you so much,"
gushed Patrick, who was practically jumping up and down in his excitement. Max turned to look at the volcano in the distance as he explained that they couldn't, however, go back to 2021 just yet.
"Joe and I need to complete our mission first. We need to find Dardan and the stolen pyramids."
"We'll help you,"
said the professor.
"But it will be dark soon, and we also need to wait for that dinosaur to leave. You can both stay here tonight."
"Thank you,"
said Joe. He didn't fancy sleeping on the ground with a T-Rex around. The professor reminded Joe of the teachers at his school. He looked a bit nerdy with his suit and thick glasses. He had a bushy beard and shoulder-length hair. Mrs. Robinson had long blonde hair and was wearing shorts and a jacket. Even though they had been trapped in a jungle, they both looked very smart. Joe thought they must be in their early 40s. He instinctively knew that he could trust them. As night fell over the jungle, the six visitors of this strange land sat down for dinner together. Over the past year, the Robinson family had learned exactly what was safe to eat, and so the group were able to enjoy a tasty vegetarian meal. After dinner, when everybody else was sleeping, Joe stood on the balcony at the highest point of the treehouse and looked out over the jungle. He couldn't believe where he was. It seemed so peaceful now. He couldn't tell if the T-Rex was still on the ground below, but at least there were no more scary noises. For just a moment, it felt like paradise. But then, a disturbing thought crossed his mind. He started to think about how worried his mum and dad would be. Even though Max had reassured him they'd return at the exact same time that they'd left, no one would even know they'd been gone. After taking one last look across the beautiful jungle landscape, Joe lay down, closed his eyes, and drifted off to sleep. Chapter 4. By the time morning broke, the T-Rex had gone. After a quick breakfast, Joe, Max, and the Robinson family packed up all their essential belongings, left the treehouse, and started to walk to the volcano. As they went, Joe looked up and noticed something in the sky.
What's that?
Max glanced up at the seemingly stationary streak of light in the sky.
That is the Chicxulub impactor. It's the meteor that caused the extinction of the dinosaurs. That must be how Dardan was able to store up enough energy to steal the pyramids.
Lily stopped in her tracks.
What? How long till it hits?
Don't worry. It looks like it won't be for another couple of days. We have plenty of time.
Lily nodded, trying to calm down, but she couldn't help but look up again at the ominous streak of light. The path was long and exhausting, but the closer they got to the volcano, the less dense the jungle became. They continued making good progress, and soon enough, they arrived at the base of the volcano.
Now, we need to find an entrance. There should be a cave somewhere,
Max told the group. The group spread out, looking for a way to access the inside of the volcano, and it wasn't long before they found the entrance to a cave.
I think it'll be safer if you all waited here. I'll go in alone and meet you all back here shortly.
Absolutely not, replied the professor. We need to stick together. If anything happens to you, we'll all be stuck here.
And there are only a couple of days until the meteor crashes and causes the extinction of the dinosaurs,
Lily reminded him. Max looked at the group.
Okay, we stick together. But if it gets too dangerous, then you'll have to find somewhere safe to hide.
He took the silver sphere out of his pocket and gave it to the professor.
You should look after this. If anything happens to me, you just need to throw it and it will activate. The controls are self-explanatory. And please make sure Joe gets home as well.
Thank you,
replied the professor.
But I won't need to use it. We're all going to leave together.
Now that they were all in agreement, they headed into the cave. The temperature was very high inside, and the walk was uncomfortable and sticky. They carried on walking for 10 minutes or so before they reached an opening. Then, cautiously, they all entered to find themselves in what appeared to be a desert.
What? Where are we? Did we make a wrong turn somewhere?
No. We're in the right place. We've walked right through the volcano.
Joe, who was feeling both brave and curious, decided to walk into the desert. As he did so, he turned to his right and almost fell to the floor in shock. When the others followed, they realised that Max's hunch had been correct. Directly in front of them, in the most unlikely time and place, were the Giza pyramids.
What do we need to do?
Joe asked Max. Max explained to the group that he needed to find the machine Darden had used to transport the landmarks. Before he could say anything else, however, a loud, squawking sound came at them from above. They all looked up to see a flock of flying dinosaurs. The professor knew exactly what they were.
They look like pterodactyls. Run!
Pterodactyl swooped down and picked up Joe, Max, and the Robinsons before the group even knew what was happening. The flock then flew up into the air before swooping back down into the volcano caves. Flying dinosaurs rushed through passages and passages of the cave system before swooping down again and gently dropping their passengers into a deep cavern. Once the pterodactyls had flown off, the group all stood up and looked around. The cavern was well lit and included a strange computer. It was eerily silent. Joe realised that it looked just like the cave in which he had first met Max. The silence was broken by a howling sound.
Ow!
Which made Joe and the Robinsons jump. This didn't, however, startle Max. He knew exactly who it was.
It's Darden,
he warned. The reality of this moment was far scarier than Joe had imagined. As a two-legged, man-sized wolf creature walked towards the terrified group.
Good to see you again, Maxillon,
said Darden.
Who are your friends?
Max approached Darden.
They're not a threat to you. Just let them go.
Darden surveyed the group that were huddled together in front of him.
I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet,
he announced.
For now, they will be my guests.
Just then, a noise started emanating from one of the passages, a marching kind of sound. As it got louder, the professor pulled out the silver sphere and threw it on the ground.
Let's go!
Just then, a green beam appeared from the central console, and before the silver sphere could expand, it was destroyed.
No!
Screamed Lily, while the others merely stared and gasped. The sound of the marching grew louder, and from out of the darkness emerged something even scarier than Darden. A whole group of bird-like blue and green dinosaurs with long necks and feathered arms, walking in unison on their two hind legs.
Meet my army of Trudon soldiers!
The dinosaurs rushed over and carried away the Robinson family before anyone could even try to move. As they disappeared into the darkness, Joe shouted after them.
We'll save you.
Darden shook his head, laughing. Now there was only Joe, Max and Darden left in the main cavern. Max looked directly at Darden.
What are you planning to do now?
As soon as I've harvested enough of the mystical power of the pyramids, I'm going to open a time portal and transport my army to the 21st century. My Wolfian friends will be joining me to take over this primitive planet. I must thank you, Maxillon, for the use of this Tamiran technology. The Organatech seeds have allowed me to build this wonderful console.
We won't let that happen,
Max responded angrily. Max grabbed Joe's hand and pulled him along, the two of them running down the passage that the Trudon army had used to take away the Robinsons.
We need to use Dardan's time portal. We only have 2 days before the meteor crashes. I'll send you and the Robinsons home, and then I'll deal with Darden myself.
That's not going to happen. We're a team. You can't defeat Darden on your own. Let's find somewhere to hide so we can come up with a plan.
Back in the main cavern, Darden was standing at his control deck. He wasn't at all worried about Max and Joe. He knew his Trudan army would find them eventually. What he needed now was patience. He didn't have enough power to open a portal to the future yet. The only thing with that much power would be the Chicxulub impactor, combined with the power of the pyramids. So now he had to wait for the meteor to enter the Earth's atmosphere. The energy released from it would give him enough power to transport his Trudan army into the future. He knew it wouldn't be long before he became the ruler of Earth. Dardan looked at the monitor in front of him. It showed him exactly where his Trudan soldiers were. Leaning forward, he pushed a button on the console. This was the mind control button. It was this Wolfian technology that allowed him to control the Trudans. Once again, the sound of marching could be heard coming down the passage, and as the Trudan army emerged into the cavern, Dardan looked up, howled, and gave his most important order so far.
Find Maxelon and his friend.
Chapter 5. The sound of the marching Trudan army could be heard echoing throughout the volcano's network of passages and caves. It was an ominous sound, but it was helping Max and Joe to stay hidden. It wasn't, however, allowing them to find the Robinson family. They had been hiding for several hours, and time was running out.
We need to find them. We need to move.
What about Dardan and his army?
Max looked towards the end of the passage they were in.
We need to stop him before we leave, but we need to rescue the Robinsons first.
Joe nodded. Cautiously, the two unlikely friends walked towards the end of the passage and listened intently. It sounded like the Trudan soldiers were far away. This was their chance. They needed to find the Robinsons, stop Darden's evil scheme and get back to the 21st century, all before the Chicxulub impactor hit.
I think I can hear someone.
Max nodded. The sound of talking could be heard ahead.
It's the Robinsons.
After walking for a few more minutes, they reached a small cave that was separated from the passages with bars over the entrance. It looked just like a dungeon. On the other side of the bars, they could see the Robinsons. At the sight of Max and Joe, the Robinsons sighed in relief.
It doesn't look like anyone's guarding this dungeon,
said a confused Joe, glancing up and down the passageway. The professor lowered his voice before replying.
There was a Trudan guard, but he left a couple of hours ago. I think the whole army is out there looking for you.
Max looked around for anything they could use to help the Robinsons escape. Finally, he noticed a pile of volcanic dust on the ground.
This looks interesting,
he thought. He blew onto the dust pile, revealing a button underneath, and when he pressed it, the bars to the dungeon immediately sank into the ground.
You did it!
Said Lily excitedly. Suddenly, they realised they could hear the unmistakable marching sound of the approaching Trudan army. Not knowing what else to do, Max and Joe joined the Robinsons inside the dungeon. As soon as they did, the bars rose again from the ground.
Did you think it would be that easy?
Boomed Dardan over the loudspeaker. The prisoners looked at each other in horror as they realised what was happening. The walls to the dungeon were closing in around them.
Look around,
ordered Max.
Find a button or lever. There must be a way to stop the mechanism.
They all started looking around, trying not to panic, though that was easier said than done. The walls were moving quite slowly, but they all knew it wouldn't be long until they were completely crushed. It was a terrifying thought. After a few moments, Patrick noticed a hole in one of the walls outside the dungeon.
I found a lever!
He screamed. He attempted to reach it, but it was too far away.
I can't get to it!
The walls were getting much closer now, and the professor held out both his arms in an attempt to slow them down.
Mum!
Shouted Patrick.
Can you use your scarf to reach the lever?
Mrs. Robinson ran to the hole, and even though her hands were shaking, she managed to loop the scarf that had been in her jacket pocket over the lever.
It won't move!
Continuing to pull on the lever, it just wouldn't budge.
Hold on to Mrs. Robinson. When she holds onto the lever, we'll pull her. Between us, we should have enough strength to move it.
So, Mrs. Robinson pulled on the lever while the rest of the group, except for the professor who was still trying to keep the walls from getting any closer, pulled her back. After a few seconds of suspense, the lever finally moved and the walls stopped moving too.
10 more seconds and we'd have been squished.
There was no time to celebrate, though, as suddenly they felt a tremor beneath them. The floor was shaking. It seemed like the volcano was going to erupt.
What's happening?
It's the meteor. It just crashed in Mexico. I must have misjudged the time of the collision.
What? What does that mean?
It means we've only got an hour to get out.
But how?
Questioned the professor, still reeling from this news.
The silver sphere was crushed.
We need to get to Dardan's main console. It can open a time portal. That's why he stole the pyramids. It will power up his console and allow him to travel through time.
Fortunately, the tremor had caused the bars to sink back into the ground, allowing them to run out of the dungeon.
Follow me!
Shouted Max.
I know where to go!
By the time they reached the central cavern, Max estimated that they only had 15 minutes left until the devastation from the meteor would reach the volcano. Unfortunately, Dardan and his army were already there. A second later, there was a bright flash of light and a portal opened. Dardan howled before following his army through. As the portal closed, Max ran towards the control deck and pressed a collection of buttons.
I've returned the pyramid to their rightful place and time,
he told the group.
It will be as if they never left. Now, we need to go.
As the volcano trembled and shook even more, rocks started falling all around the cavern. Max pressed a few more buttons, and then there was another bright flash. Another portal had opened.
Let's go!
They all rushed over to the portal and ran through. Max was the last to enter, and as the portal closed, the volcano exploded, showering the landscape with molten rock and lava. Joe squinted as he emerged into the light. The Robinsons were next, and they were followed by Max. They all looked around, taking in their surroundings and blinking in the sudden daylight.
We're in a field,
said Lily.
Are we back home?
Not quite. I didn't have time to set the exact coordinates. I had to stop Dardan getting to the 21st century. So I changed his destination. I could only open our portal to the same time.
So when are we?
Asked the professor, noticing a camp in the distance. Before Max could answer, they noticed a group of people approaching on horseback. As the group got closer, Joe realised when they were.
Are they Roman legionaries?
Yes.
What's the year?
Growled the professor. Max looked at his friends and sighed.
It's the year AD 143.